Welcome to Native Yoga Toddcast. So happy you are here. My goal with this channel is to bring inspirational speakers to the mic in the field of yoga, massage, body work, and beyond. Follow us at Native Yoga and check us out at nativeyogacenter.com. All right, let's begin. Hello and welcome to Native Yoga Toddcast. Today, I'm so excited to have the opportunity to bring to you Pam Jones. Pam is a yoga teacher. She studies under Sri Dharma Mitra, and she also is a trained Ayurvedic chef. During this conversation, Pam shares her journey from growing up in London to finding her way to New York City, practicing with Dharma Mitra, becoming a yoga teacher, and the way that she shares her passion and love for yoga with the global community today. You can find Pam on her website, karmacoco.com, and all of her social media handles are easily found there. Click on the link in the description and you can give her a follow. And thank you so much, Pam. This was great. Let's go ahead and get started. I'm so happy to have Pam Jones here with me today in the studio. And Pam, what a great treat. How are you feeling today?
Feeling fantastic. How are you, Todd?
I'm doing really well. Maybe, there you
yes.
go. Yes,
uh-huh. Closer, closer thank to you. The mic.
Yeah.
Thank uh-huh. you so much for having me. It's such an honor and a pleasure. And thanks so much for all you're doing. It's a fantastic platform for us to all share and hopefully can be of service today.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you so much. You have an accent. Where are you from originally?
I'm from Brooklyn. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I'm from London.
Nice.
You can tell that already. But yeah.
That's where you were born and raised?
Born and raised.
Yeah.
I've been in lived in New York for about, let's say, 13 years.
Okay. Yeah. Nice. And now you're living in Florida.
Living in Florida. Been here for 2 years.
Cool.
How are you settling? My accent maybe have changed a little bit. I don't know. But still at Starbucks, sometimes they don't understand me. So
yeah.
I sometimes have to change my accent.
Yeah, you have to try to like.
They ask your name, Pam, and they write man or han or pan, cotton pan. And to the point where I'm just like, it's Pam.
There you go. That sounds American.
But yeah, I'm born and raised in London.
Nice. Well, when did you start yoga practice?
I've, dabbled in it for many years. I was a dancer before and I'd taken classes, probably since I was about 16.
Mm.
And for me, it was really a lot. They always say, right, the teacher finds you when you're ready.
Yeah.
And I think when I was in my 20s, I was always looking for answers, trying to find happiness, not getting it, as we all do.
Yes.
I was a dancer before and I had gone to a really good school and I got into a dance company. When I got there, I was like, is this it?
Yeah.
It wasn't fulfilling for me. And I think that was probably my first class where I took at Shivananda Yoga. And then later on, a few years later, I kind of switched careers and became a fashion designer. I trained in London, went to some of the best design schools, but still there wasn't, on paper it looked really good, but just didn't fulfill me.
Yeah.
And my friend said, why don't you try yoga? I think it was a really low point in my life where constantly searching for happiness, going to traveling here and there or reaching at a certain pinnacle of your career and not really feeling fulfilled. And my friend said, why don't you try some yoga? And at the time there was a place called Jivamukti Yoga in London, which is very, very popular now. But
yes.
At that time, some of the teachers that were trained in New York came to London to build Jivamukti London.
Gotcha.
And that was probably my very first yoga class, a real yoga class, where
gotcha.
I felt like, this is the first time I feel myself. I don't feel judged.
Yeah.
I feel like this could be it. This is my tribe. This is
yeah.
This is it.
Yeah.
I feel like some connection here.
Nice.
Some connection to whatever you want to call that, the divine, yeah. the source, whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, having been a dancer, I love movement, especially more rigorous type of movement. And Jiva Mukti was a way, was really the sequencing I loved. They also had the focus of the month. So they added some kind of philosophy in there. And for me, that it really spoke to me. It really was a sign, like, maybe this is it. Like,
nice.
I just keep coming back. And the teachers yeah. there said, if you're ever in New York, you should meet a yogi called Sri Dharma Mitra.
Mm.
And mm-hmm. so I mm-hmm. had no idea who this person was. So I Googled him,
yeah.
you know,
how
you
yeah. Yeah.
And I just saw yeah. a guy standing on his head with no hat, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
You've probably all seen that. If you've never seen it,
yeah.
you Google it. Dharma Mitra, he's standing on his head in the middle of the street. I thought, wow. And those two teachers said to me, you know, he's the real deal.
Yeah,
yes. Probably because they took classes with him back in the day.
Yeah.
And so 2007, when I met him, I said to my sister, let's go to New York. Let's meet this Sri Dharma Mitra. These teachers are saying he's the real deal.
Yeah.
So I
yeah.
really want to meet this real yeah. deal, you know?
Yeah.
And so off we went. Never been to New York before. I met Sri Dharma. And when I met him, I was like, he is the real deal.
Yeah.
I can't even explain it, Todd. It was like the vibration, just the whole room, this humility. You couldn't even tell that he walked in the room so quietly. With such yeah. humble energy,
yeah.
helping the students, you know, adjusting the mats so everybody's mats were in, you know, this right spot and everybody has enough space, you know. I remember him giving me a paper towel at the end because there was no paper towel. And I washed my hands and I was about to wipe my hands on my pants.
Mm.
And there was a hand behind me. It was like, here's the paper towel.
Mm,
So sweet.
Yeah.
So kind.
Yeah. yeah.
So yeah, that was my first
nice.
Experience with Dharma.
Nice. And so you had come over, had a visit in New York City, and then what, went back to London, I'm guessing, because you just came over on a vacation.
So after that vacation, I was like, that's it. I want to move to New York. Mm. I don't know how. Mm. I don't have a visa or anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I just kept praying and thinking about it and visualizing it that maybe a miracle will happen. And I remember on that flight back, I was thinking, I don't care how I you know, survive in New York. I just want to train with this master. He yeah. obviously is the real yeah. deal and it'd be yeah. amazing. I just kept thinking about it. And at that time, I was in my final year of fashion design at the Royal College of Art. And my fashion tutor said, Pam, there's a company in New York, a fashion company in New York that's looking for fashion designers.
Uh-huh.
I was like, you got to be kidding me. Like, yeah. if this happens, yeah. that will be a yeah. miracle.
Yeah.
She put me first on the list,
uh-huh.
the interviews. I had my portfolio, I had the rack of clothes,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
opened the door. And he's like, welcome, you know, nice to meet you. Looked through my portfolio and he said, do you know anyone in New York? And I was like, no. But in my mind, I was like, I know Sri Dharma Mitra.
Uh-huh.
But he meant, do yeah. you have any friends?
Yes.
Do you have any family? And I was uh-huh. like, no. And he said, are you sure you want to move to New York? And I was like, big grin, you know.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Thinking, if this happens, if he offers me a job, this will be the most amazing thing.
Yeah.
And he said, welcome to New York. I'm offering you a job.
Wow.
And I tried to keep yeah. really calm.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as soon as I left that interview, I was jumping up and down. I couldn't believe this had happened.
Wow.
He offered me a job, offered me a visa.
Right then and there. It wasn't even like, let me think about this and call you back later.
I couldn't believe it because thought, you know, maybe you would wait until later on in the day or call me back.
Yeah.
I just remember calling my best friend. I was like, yeah. Oh my goodness.
Oh my gosh.
I'm moving to New York.
That's awesome.
And 2 weeks later, that was what I did. I packed my bags. I moved to New York.
This is in 07 or 08? You said?
So this was 2008.
2008.
Summer of 2008.
Gotcha.
And I remember at the time, yeah, because I wanted to do classes with Dharma, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But his evening classes didn't start until 6 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
I think it was 6 o'clock. And I finished work at 6:30, so there was no way I yeah. could make that.
Yeah.
But that somehow it changed. So his classes started a little bit later, I think it's 6:30 or 7, where I was able to just run out of work and go to his classes. I thought,
yeah.
goodness, this is amazing.
So yeah, right.
I was just continuing. You know? I felt like one foot was in corporate world, fashion.
Yeah.
The other foot was in...
Yeah.
yogi world.
Yeah.
And for me, that time was very special.
That's cool. Well, how long did you keep that job in the fashion world upon arrival into New York?
So I was in the company for about 9 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. Solid stint. Yeah.
I was fighting, though. At the beginning, it was really creative and fun, and I loved it. But the more I got into yoga, it was like, I want to be a yogi now. Until much later, I realized that you don't have to give all of that up.
Yeah.
You still can be a yogi in your everyday life, whatever job you do.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. What was the main thing that stuck out at you in relation to practice with Dharma, in relation to, was it the asana practice? Was it the mantra practice? Was it the Dharma talks, or just, you know, hearing philosophy about yoga? Or, I mean, the cool thing about Dharma Mitra is he has, you know, he's pulling from all the different methods of yoga in relation to kirtan and talking about Bhagavad Gita, so philosophy, and then obviously there's tons of asana opportunities. Was there something that you that caught you the most in the beginning?
Well, in the beginning, it was definitely the asana.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes when we do these asanas, yes, at the beginning it can be very uncomfortable, especially when you're a bit more. I mean, I was a dancer, so I was already very flexible, but not so much strong. But even so, doing a headstand for me was terrifying. Like, I'm going to break my neck, or I'm going to hurt my, you know, hurt someone else.
Yeah.
But I was just really, I guess, impressed by what this master could do. Mm. But at the same time, he was so humble about it. There was a feeling of devotion as he was teaching, as we were practicing. So Dharma often says that all the poses are an offering to God, or all the poses are like an offering. It's a moving prayer, moving meditation. So it's not just for you, my body, I'm getting strong, I'm getting flexible. It's a moving meditation, a moving prayer, and it's such a beautiful thing. And you really do feel that when you're taking his class.
Yes.
I think, but at the beginning, it was definitely the asana that drew me in. And then later, it was more the philosophy and self-realization, figuring out who the hell we are, you know, what are we doing here?
Yeah. What are we doing here?
Good question.
Yeah. Have you figured it out? Do you have a good answer for me? What would be your answer at this point?
Well, to realize that we are not this pile of flesh and bones, because this body is always changing, you know. Mm. And to realize that what we are searching for is not out there. That's what led me to Dharma, really, was because there was so much unhappiness and so much just, you know, when you get somewhere or you get a big house or when you go on that vacation, there's always something more. And it's fleeting and it's transient and it's always constantly changing. The weather's constantly changing. Your body's, your thoughts are constantly changing. I mean, it's so much up and down and up and down and up and down. And if we could just look within a bit more and ebb and flow a bit more with this life, because life is full of these ups and downs, these pleasurable experiences and unpleasurable experiences. If we could just be a bit more of the witness and not be so identified with, oh my God, this is happening. Yeah. That's always changing as well. And to have a bit more of that. Dharma always says, dance with it. Dance with whatever karma is coming to you. And understand and have that faith in the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can, you know, we can control maybe the action and the practice, but we can't control the results of what we do. And we shouldn't. And we just, the Bhagavad Gita says that, right? Just,
yeah.
Do your best and renounce the results of your actions, the fruits of your actions. It's easier said than done, because I think we're brought up in a way that, you know, your parents always told you, you've got to go out there, told you, you've got to do it, you've got to get it, if you don't do it, you're not going to get, and you've got to be the winner, you've got to get up and do.
Yeah.
And I think yoga is just like not constantly doing.
Yeah.
It's more, I feel for me, it's more revealing these layers.
Nice.
Like, I always think of a bulb, a light bulb. that we all have within us. And yoga is peeling away this dust, these layers of dust that are hiding what's really within the self, the divinity that's within us all, that divinity, that bliss, that happiness doesn't depend on whether how many Instagram likes we have or what vacation we have or how much money we have. You know, that's unchanging.
Good point. Well said, Pam. You're making me feel relaxed because you have such a nice voice. So I feel like
I'm not getting you to sleep.
No, not at all. I like the visuals. I like the visual of the light bulb and the obscuration of the light. And that's a good point. I like the fact that you mentioned to dance with the challenges. Like personally, something that came up within this week that has been weighing on my mind a little bit is that where my son goes to school is a public school. He's in high school. There were two incidents where people were arrested with guns on them in school. So they're now like putting up metal detectors so that everybody coming in and out of school is going to be checked before they get in. And then just yesterday at our local mall, at the Gardens Mall, there was a shooting and everything got locked down. And it just, I guess, made me just have a lot of, I guess I could say fear or apprehension of what is the world coming to on some levels. But I think the way you mentioned dance with it, it just kind of shifted my thinking toward, okay, this is the momentary drama that's in front of me and I just got to wait to see what it presents, right? Like, but I just I agree. I feel like there's always heavy energy of some sort going on some level. So to be able to navigate that and still feel purpose and still feel optimistic and excited and at the same time process it all so that we move through it. Because I always notice too, it does have this like, we'll have a couple of days of like, whew, wow. Whoa, look, all these great things going on. Oh my gosh, this is so cool. And then a couple of days where it's like, what is going on? Yeah. What is that? So not getting attached to that and just seeing what evolves. What has been the most recent thing for you that's caused you to go, ooh, how could I dance with this? Because I'm just not sure how I could. Have you had any thoughts about the state of reality or the world currently that's made you think that way?
I mean, sometimes we can get so focused on the negative, especially if you look at the news every day. You just think the whole world is bad and, you know, this is the world coming to an end and the consciousness of people. I mean, it's crazy what's happening today. And sometimes the mind can really focus on that. And sometimes we get obsessed, right? Even when we're watching the news, we want to know what's happening. And it's almost like this weird obsession we have with negative news and to really pull back and say, acknowledge that there are great things happening. There are good people. I mean,
yes,
just look at your neighbors, look at, you know, what you're doing. There are great things that are happening, good people, and the consciousness is rising.
Yes. Agreed. Yeah. I agree 100%.
I wish the news would just also celebrate the good as well as the bad.
That's a good point.
Because the news is sensational and they want you to be attached and keep looking at it on your phone.
Yeah, what's the next story? The next story? Good point. So then what is your strategy? Do you avoid it? Do you stay in touch? Do you do a combo of both? What is your personal health habit in relation to consumption of information?
I mean, I look at it to stay in touch, but I know I have to really be aware of when is it healthy and when is it not healthy?
Yeah.
Put that phone down.
Yeah.
I never have the phone when I'm sleeping. I never have it in the bedroom. Always put it away.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the room.
Yeah.
I have my time. And some people have like, okay, they have the time and like no more than an hour on the news or whatever it is, social media.
Yeah.
I think it's just having that self-control.
Yes.
Of how much time and whether it's good for us, whether it's healthy for us, or we're being sucked into this vortex. Mm. Before you know it, you spent like 2 hours on the phone. Whatever it is.
Good point, right?
And it's, I could have been spending 2 hours helping someone else or talking to you or meditating or doing my practice.
Yes.
I mean, how much value do you put on that versus...
Good point. Good point. Good question, or good point. In relation to then, obviously we can take in info via our eyes and our ears. I don't really feel like I use my nose when I read the news very much. So on that note, what about your philosophy on what you ingest as food? Because then there's like the mouth. I think the nose probably plays a little more with the mouth, the taste, the smell. What is your current practice, or what's your thoughts on diet?
My thoughts on diet. So, you know, as a practitioner, it's very important that we practice ahimsa, non-violence. I mean, that's what Sri Dharma, my teacher, always drilled into us. Like, try your best to see yourself and others, not just human beings, but also animal beings. And all beings love life. That was his words. All beings love life and they fear violence. So, you know, there's no judgment. Everyone has their choice and their practice and what's good for them and what's, you know. But I feel for me, at the moment, it's a vegan diet, which means trying to avoid anything that's from an animal.
Yeah.
I still have some things that I guess I'm not a pure vegan, because I still have some things that are made of wool or, you know, an old belt, but I wouldn't consciously buy a new, a leather belt or something made of down or something like that. But diet is very important, because it not only, it's about ahimsa, non-violence, seeing yourself in others and other beings, but also with what you feel as well. When you eat junk food, processed food, dead food, you often feel dead, processed and lacking of energy. So as a practitioner, you always want to feel full of life force energy, because we're made of life force energy. So to have that fuel, to really, you know, fuel the body in the right way, instead of junk food, processed food, frozen food, things like that.
Yeah. So, do you prepare food? Are you?
Yeah, I love, that's one of my favorite things, because I love making food, because it's therapeutic for me. I know a lot of people, I can't stand, I can't be in the kitchen. But for me, it's the whole process is a meditation.
Yeah.
You know, to infuse your food with positive vibration, with mantras. I love singing when I'm cooking.
Nice.
And when that person eats it, when you're serving others, they also feel that love, that vibration, because of what you, of your thoughts and your prayers that you put in. So the whole thing is a practice for me.
That's cool. Have you seen the movie like Water for Chocolate?
Yes.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, I love that.
For those of you listening that have not seen it, the basic gist is that, like, maybe as this chef is cooking, say, a cake, and if she was crying while she was cooking it, maybe even a tear dropped into the cake, or maybe just the emotion that she's feeling while she's cooking, when the people would eat the cake, they'd start crying, or like whatever emotion she had, which, you know, maybe it doesn't happen that intensely, but I think that's interesting in relation to this concept in yoga of prasad or prasadam, where we offer. My first exposure to yoga was via the Krishna consciousness movement, the Hare Krishnas.
Yeah.
And so there was always, they would cook the food and then offer it to Krishna first. And then after the food was blessed and or offered to God or Krishna, then you'd eat it. And it was this idea that you're kind of like saying grace or, you know, having a prayer before where there was offering appreciation to it. So I'm curious, do you have any rituals like that that you involve in your yoga and or cooking processes?
When we make the food and then serve it, before we eat it, to sit down, to say a blessing, to say a prayer, to thank all the people that have made it possible, from the people that grew it to the people in the grocery store, to the people, you know, the truck driver that brought the vegetables to the group, you know, the whole chain of people, really, to say thank you and how blessed we are to have this amazing food. We're so blessed at all this organic food. There's so much choice. And yet there's people just not having any of that, starving in the world. So really being grateful, you know, before, and it just, it just makes you feel good. And you'll be able to digest it better that way rather than just wolfing it down.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do forget, though. It's not all, I'm not like Bill. My husband, Andrew, he's like, remember. Say a blessing first. We have the mantra for purification, which Dharma teaches us.
Nice.
So we say that before we eat.
Nice. Very cool. Do you... what is, like when you wake up in the morning, do you like cook every day? Do you try to prepare this big amount of food at the beginning of the week so that you aren't scrambling and reaching for frozen food? Or do you have a ritual that keeps you where you're ready to go?
Things that are simple. So it's not overwhelming. So sometimes I do prepare. I don't cook like the beginning of the week and eat the whole, because then it's the prana's dwindling as the week goes on. So I try to cook every day, but I cook really simple things like a red lentil soup. I might have soaked them the night before. So then there's that step of preparation. So I'm not spending hours in the kitchen, or maybe I'll chop some vegetables in the morning so that by the evening they're just ready to throw in, and it's super quick. It's one pot, 20 minutes, and I'm done, you know.
That's cool. And you're a certified Ayurvedic nutritionist.
Yes.
Did I get that right?
That's it. Yeah.
Can you explain, for those of us that have never heard about the doshas, can you explain, or it doesn't have to be really in depth, but can you at least name them or explain the doshas and which one you think you fall into?
Yeah, absolutely. So Ayurveda is the science of life. So in Ayurveda, we talk about these energies, these doshas. So you have air and space and fire and water and earth. So vata are really comprised of air and space. Focus on all of us are all three doshas. But my constitution may be a little bit more pitta. Maybe I have a dual constitution, pitta kapha, right? Mm-hmm. But I have all three. Everybody has all three of them, just different proportionalities in each person.
Yeah.
So vata would be air and space. So if you think of a balloon, you release it in the air, it just goes wherever, you know, the wind blows. It's light, it's airy. Tendency for vata constitution is a bit more of the airy and spacey qualities. They a little bit inconsistent. They can be if unbalanced.
Yeah.
Their frame is thin and narrow shoulders, narrow hips. We call them skinny mini. They're cooler to touch with the skin. And they have drier skin, maybe suffer a little bit of dry hair, dry colon. They may suffer from constipation if not dealt with properly. During the fall, which is vata season, they can experience a lot more of these vata symptoms, like dry colon, dry skin, dry hair, dry nails, brittle nails. So they have to balance that out. In the Ayurveda, there's one golden rule, which is like increases like and opposites bring balance. What does that mean? So if I'm cold, I naturally put on a sweater. If I'm thirsty, if I'm dry in my mouth, I drink some water. Right? We constantly bring ourselves into balance. We do it unconsciously.
Yeah.
In Ayurveda, we're doing it consciously. So if you know your vata constitution and you feel you have dry hair, you suffer from constipation, you may have a bit more of those airy and spacey thoughts like spaciness or anxiety or ungroundedness. Think of that balloon, just ungrounded, just wafting away.
Yes.
We can help ourselves by eating more grounded foods like grains, sweet potatoes, root vegetables, because root vegetables have a special grounding quality. So beets and carrots and parsnips and celeriac, they're all going to help you eat more soups and stews and warming foods.
Got
and
it.
Avoid dry foods, because if you're already dry and you eat dry things, remember the golden rule is going to just bring you more dry.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Balance that with moisture, you know, unctuous foods, good oils, good fats, things like that. So, and then, sorry, I'm going to go if it's too much detail.
No, that was good. That was good. Please.
And then if you're pitta, that's fire and water. So I'm more of a pitta type. So medium frame, they generally have a warmer skin. Their mind is usually quite sharp, but their tendency is if unbalanced, their tendency is more critical, more perfectionism. You know, you've met people like that, right? Sometimes when you're with someone who's really pitta, you can feel their fieriness. You're like, ooh, I've got to have a break from you. You know, sometimes too competitive, too critical of themselves and others because of that fiery nature.
Yeah.
So So, of course, if you're fiery and you eat heating foods like jalapeno, cayenne pepper, chili pepper, curries, coffee, chocolate, those foods are going to give you more heat. And so you balance that with more cooling foods, avocados and cilantro and cucumbers, especially in Florida weather.
That makes sense.
When it's hot. And the tougher, more, you know, a bigger body type, a good amount of muscle and tissue there, really good skin. They usually have beautiful big eyes and good skin, good thick hair. So that's more earth and water. So if you think of earth, it's really grounded. It's, you can build things with it. So they're normally a very stable person. They make good listeners. But their tendency, if imbalanced, they could be a bit more leaning towards obesity, you know, overweight, obesity, possessiveness, much groundedness.
Yeah, yeah. Not enough air.
Not enough air. Balance that with more light foods, right?
Light foods?
Light foods.
Life or light?
Light foods.
Light foods.
Because if kapha is quite heavy, naturally, if you have more potato and too many cheese and ice cream and heavy foods, and then it's going to be more heavy, like increases like. So bring that back to balance with the opposite foods.
Yeah.
Some warm foods, some easy to digest, some light foods.
Nice. Yeah. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Do you think that has like the similar correlation in relation to asana practice in terms of pose and counter pose, back bend, forward bend? Do you see similarities in those two disciplines?
Yeah, I think they're both just as important.
Yeah.
And we can balance that with, you know, with our age, with where we are in the world, with the season, with our dosha, everything, where we are, our conditions. So that's why there's not one rule that fits all in food and in yoga. That's the beauty, isn't it, of yoga, is that there are so many different styles. There's not one that's better than the other. It's just perfect because we need different yogas for different people, different conditions.
Yeah, good point.
You know?
Do you have a mantra practice that you gravitate toward or a specific mantra that's your daily go-to mantra that you use to protect your mind?
There is one that I mentioned before, mantra for purification. I can't share it because normally it's done with just by listening to Dharma and trying to recite that.
Yeah.
And he always says that should never be written down.
Yeah.
But
understood.
That's the mantra I normally chant every morning. It's a mantra to purify the ground and the space and the psychic subtle channels in our body. It's a mantra for purification.
I know it's probably hard to put into words subtle energy or talking about subtle energy or psychic energy or chakra energy, but can you attempt to verbalize what your learning has been since practicing with Dharma in relation to these subtler energies?
Yeah, that's a big question. I mean, I guess at the beginning of the practice or the beginning of our journey, it's more physical, right? We do the asanas. You know, we do the certain lines, right? We hit certain lines and shapes. But yet there's an underlying subtle energy there as we're hitting those lines. Like when we're doing a warrior properly, you feel like a warrior. There's this energetic, I guess, a subtler energy that maybe you can't see. Maybe the yoga teacher can't see that, but you feel it by hitting those lines, by doing the pose and feeling like a warrior, you become it. You know, like not just a warrior, but I guess any pose, like Kurmasana, tortoise pose. Our head is down, our limbs are like out here, and I guess we're withdrawing the senses, just like a tortoise would withdraw its limbs into the shell.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But in terms of, chakras and subtle energy and things that we can't see, we call them, I guess, subtle and spiritual. Like Dharma always says, these are very cheap cameras, these eyes. They can see form and colors and textures. But that often in yoga we say, draw the attention to your third eye. Well, where's the third eye? Like, I can't, there's no, I can't see your third eye. But it's there energetically. And if we can just close our eyes and bring that attention there, it's, this point here is called the third eye or the eye of wisdom, because it's the portal to divine consciousness. And whether, you know, there's no proof to that, but we have faith in that, right? It's faith and
we
feel it.
Yes. That's
difficult
cool.
to explain.
It is difficult to explain. I don't know that it's possible, to be honest. I imagine each person's experience with it is very unique. Have you had a Kundalini experience? Could you... And you don't have to answer these questions, because I understand that maybe if someone does have a Kundalini experience or feel like they have had, they might feel like, well, it's not something that I want to talk about publicly because it might be so personal. I remember meeting or hearing the first time I came across somebody that said, I believe in God, but I don't talk about God because my communication with God and or my relationship with God is something that's so personal that I just don't talk about it out loud. I don't express that verbally. So I completely understand if it's something that you don't want to answer. But have you had, or do you think you've had, an experience of Kundalini? And I guess I should try to define what I think Kundalini is. I mean, what I understand Kundalini is that there's, you can feel some type of vibration in the central channel, and that we have this Ida and Pingala, these two auxiliary channels on either side, and that perhaps energy would go from the 3.5 times wrapped around the sacrum up through the spinal column and then some sort of uplifting through the top of the head. What has been your experience with Kundalini? Have you had any type of association with that?
Kundalini, it's interesting. It's the word, isn't it? It's like, well, what does it mean? What is it?
Yeah.
Is it a feeling? Is it a thought? Sure, I've had, you know, a feeling of absolute bliss where I'm absolutely connected. I feel that.
Yeah.
But again, these are all experiences, and the mind can also witness that. And even if we did have the Kundalini experience, you know, we may think, oh, I'm there, I'm enlightened, or I'm reaching samadhi. But it's still an experience.
Yeah.
So Dharma often says, that's still not it, because you're experiencing it. Whatever you can experience, this bliss, this Kundalini energy, still not it, because ultimately it's not something you can experience. Then there's subject, object.
Yeah, yeah.
It just is.
Yeah, good point. What have you learned studying with him in relation to psychic energy? Because I know he has a class on his schedule that is psychic development class. I remember the first time I saw his schedule and I saw the psychic development class, I thought, wow, I wonder what that class is like. Can you explain what he does and or what your experience has been in that field?
Love those techniques. And I think that we all can be psychic. When I say psychic, I don't mean reading the crystal ball or anything like that. But we all have imagination. We all can visualize. When we were a kid, we visualize, I don't know, going to Disney World or whatever, and we're there. It's amazing, those techniques, because a lot of those techniques are dealing with prana and kind of building this psychic, like a firewall of protection. So we often do certain breathing techniques where we draw the energy up through the spine and back. It's a concentration meditation as well as moving the prana.
Yes.
It's very difficult to do those techniques when the mind is somewhere else.
Yeah.
But they're great techniques also to bring the mind back and just to be focused on can you bring your attention from the toes all the way up to the crown and back and through, you know, different parts of the body? Yeah. So it's a great way to for concentration, but we're moving the prana. And, you know, I can't talk too much about the psychic development techniques because it's something, again, it should be done with the master and learn in person. But, yeah, I mean, a lot, often I will think of a question and he's answered it without me asking the question. So that's psychic, right?
Yeah.
It's like, have you ever thought of a friend and then 10 minutes later they call you? That's psychic. That you have that energy.
Yeah.
Your thought is moving on the prana.
Yeah. Communication through silence.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah.
And I love that. I think we could, I think maybe we're moving towards more of that in the future rather than talking like this. We could just, I know what you're thinking.
Yeah, good point. So the cell phones are the material manifestation of psychic energy, maybe.
Yeah.
Like what we, at some point, we just decided, let's not trust our psychic ability, so let's get concrete evidence, so let's hold a device that can actually transmit the...
Isn't it weird? It's such a strange thing, isn't it?
It is
very... Dharma has a great analogy with the cell phone. So he says, we're all cell phones. We all think we're this name and form. I'm Motorola, you're maybe Samsung, someone else might be iPhone, right? Different models. We're so identified with this cell phone set.
Yeah.
So, but without the signal, the cell phone would be dead. It wouldn't work.
Yeah.
We're not the cell phone, we're the signal. So maybe when I get, when this cell phone set gets older, I need to change it for a new cell phone, update it to iPhone, what is it now, 14 or whatever. Gonna update it.
Yeah.
But the signal hasn't changed.
Yeah. Good point. I like that is a good analogy, isn't it? Haven't heard that one. That. Yeah. That's kind of fun.
We so identify with this.
Yeah.
Cell phone set with this name and form, with body, personality. Identify with this ego, this I am.
What do you, I know this is a subject that sometimes is a little bit more challenging, but what type of meditations do you do on passing, on death, on letting go? Do you ever, are you able to put time into that, or is that something that maybe you just avoid?
Oh no, I definitely put time into that. Yeah, I mean, it's a big one for me, death. What? Who's dying first? The body? Body in the Gita, I think it's chapter 2 or something. You know, the person casts off worn out clothes. So the embodied self also casts off worn out bodies and enters into new ones, right?
Yeah.
You know, when my, so my mother passed away about 4 years ago. So it was a big shock to the whole family. You know, she did yoga, she was a dancer. And, you know, I remember getting that phone call saying, Mum's in hospital. And, you know, me flying from New York, coming back to London, just seeing her in intensive care, have oxygen masks, everything. Like, it was complete shock. You know, I remember as a kid crying in my bed thinking, one day I'm not going to have my parents. Like, one day in the future, my parents are not going to be here physically.
Yep.
And that day comes around just like that, when you least expect it. And I remember thinking to my, you know, my mum, so after she had an operation, it was bowel cancer, so colon cancer, stage 4. When they opened her up, it was like already, it was like, so from here, it was like, whoa, all the way here, like, whoa, stage 4 colon cancer.
Yeah.
So it was a huge shock, but also it was a beautiful thing in the way that she dealt with it, because those last 2 years after she got the diagnosis, she was like, that's it, you know, live my life to the max, do everything that I want to do. We took her to Italy. She just, you know, all the clothes that she'd saved for parties and things, she wore them every day, new shoes and new clothes. We took her to Italy. She managed, you know, even though she was really, really thin, she managed to enjoy the food and she had a great time. And she used to tell us, like, don't worry about me. She was like fearless.
That's cool that you had that.
I take with me.
Yeah.
I think about her every day. I'm like, yeah. I see my mom's face. She was fearless. And it's very, you know, of course we go through grief and we go through all these, like, and then it makes you think of your own mortality, right? When you lose a loved one, or
yes.
I don't know whether you've experienced yes. that, someone that's very close.
Yes.
It also makes you think of your own mortality and to think that you've got to do the things that you want, you love, and yeah. what's important. Yeah. It makes you question what's important in life.
Yeah. Good point.
Is it spending that much time on social media? Is it spending time with my loved ones? You know, can I hug my dad a bit more? Can I spend time with my sister a bit more? Can I help others a bit more? Can I do, you know, spend time doing the practice, because that's so important to, you know, it yes. just makes you question. And
yeah.
I actually do a death meditation in the morning. It's funny you ask that, because it's kind of a Buddhist meditation.
Uh-huh.
I learned this from a fantastic teacher called Geshe Michael Roach. And it's, you know, sitting there and visualizing your own death, really. It's not to sound morbid, but to imagine what it's like, visualize your own death. You imagine you're in the coffin. This is, or imagine, not maybe not so much in the coffin, but if this was your last week, you could see the people mourning, you could see the people around you, all the things that you've accumulated throughout your whole life, you can see it all laid out there. And you ask yourself, like, what is important? And then maybe nice. You'll make some changes in your life.
Yes.
Like, do the things that you love. You know, live your Dharma, do the things that you love.
Yeah.
Like it's your last day.
That's amazing. You just never know
when that day. We think that we live till 80, 90, but you just never know.
Yeah. It's a good point. That's a great meditation. I know it's can trigger people to talk about, to you know, go deep in on actually coming to terms with the fact that how much more time, I don't know, right? Yeah. But it does make life a little bit more exciting, don't you think?
I think so.
Yeah, yeah, agreed.
And then remember, we've been here before. This is like another time we've born a new body, and then next life it's like, okay, just a continuation of where you left off in the past.
Yes.
So this lifetime.
I'm so curious, what caused you to want to leave New York and come to Florida?
Well, COVID happened. That big C.
What was that?
I'm kidding. Right?
Yeah.
What was that?
Oh, I don't remember that.
It feels like so long ago, but it's
I'm
not.
Joking. You know, oh my goodness, yes.
Many things.
Well, what was your experience in New York City? Because I had a chance to interview yoga teachers that were in New York during COVID. I started this podcast, it'll be 4 years ago in March. And so my first episode, I'm sitting in my garage with my microphone and this little mixer going, what's going on? Holy cow. I don't get it. What's happening right now? So then as I started to interview different teachers around the world and find out, I was like, very therapeutic for me, because, you know, I felt isolated. I think everybody felt isolated on one level or another. So I'm just curious, because New York City, I think would have been a very difficult place to be in a city, period. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was enlightening. Maybe you had a great experience. Not a great experience, but
yeah.
Maybe you were able to take something from it.
Definitely. I still love that city. It's like the best one in the world, I think.
Why do you think
it's the sense of you can achieve anything there. Mm. It's like that great song, you know, you can do anything.
Not in London? Not the same vibe?
Not quite. It's a bit more gloomy. It's a bit more, okay, let's have a drink, let's go to the pub culture. But in New York, you have that feeling. I don't know why. It's this vortex. I think it's this vortex.
Yeah, that
makes
sense.
Invisible energy.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I can do anything.
Yeah.
And people have, I feel they're just in general very positive. Mm-hmm. It can be exhausting. It is very exhausting, I would say. If you don't have a practice, you don't have a morning practice, a yoga practice, any something, because of that vortex and constantly doing and achieving, and I'm walking around with my coffee and I've got to do something,
yeah.
be something, be
yeah.
somewhere.
Yeah.
So it definitely has a lot of that energy. And then when COVID hit, it was really interesting, because yeah, everything just stopped. It was like this vortex just was like, boom. Everything boarded
up. Yeah.
I remember going to Trader Joe's, six feet.
Yeah.
People yelling at each other because you're too close, you're too close.
Yeah.
So it was very, very surreal. It was like almost like a ghost town at some point. And a lot of fear. We lived in the East Village, Stuyvesant Town. Mm. I remember, 6 o'clock, I think it was 5:30, 6 o'clock, we would all bash our pots and pans to thank all the health workers.
Yeah, I remember that.
It's like that. And everything would be like taken from the shelves in Trader Joe's and Whole Foods and
go in. Yeah.
And doing yoga online, I mean, I was talking about that with Andrew and so surreal.
Yeah.
I remember doing that, the final, helping out the final teacher training there, you know, and people didn't have enough masks and I had one left and I gave it to a student. I said, you're going back to Singapore, you take it, you know. The whole thing was just so surreal. And then trying to figure out this whole thing. It was Vimeo. Uh-huh. It wasn't even Zoom. Uh-huh. It was Vimeo. We were trying to do Vimeo, you know, and like faffing around on that. And what was it? IG Live or whatever. And not being able to see the students. That was super weird.
Challenging for sure.
Really challenging. And now we're just like second hand now. It's just like normal.
Yeah. Correct.
But I think it's a beautiful thing that came out of, I mean, it was tragic and so many people lost their lives and so much suffering, but at the same time, it made people question what was important in their lives.
Yeah, agreed.
And also the fact that people can access you, you were doing probably the same Zoom where people all over the world could do your class now.
True.
Anyway, it doesn't have to be in person live.
Yeah.
So it just opened a few more doors, I think. But New York was kind of weird. It was very surreal.
And that was, let's go to Florida.
Well, we had a family apartment in Palm Beach here. And it was actually Andrew's mother's summer home.
Gotcha.
It made sense. It was really old. We had renovated it. And it was the perfect timing.
Yeah.
It didn't make sense to be in New York. We had our time in New York and we're still learning from Dharma and all that, you know, still being with the Sangha. We fly back and forth all the time, but just didn't make sense to pay crazy amount of rent where the studio is closed and can't really do much. Everything's online. Why don't let's be in a sunny place?
Yeah. Good point.
Let's be somewhere that's actually warm and nice and go to the beach and had to renovate the apartment anyway, so it was a perfect.
That's so cool.
And I don't feel like New York is so close, just a couple of hours and you're there. So
it really is.
It's the best of both worlds, I think.
Have you driven yet from Florida to New York, or have you only flown?
Yes, we actually drove.
I haven't drove that whole distance yet.
It's a nice drive.
Yeah.
Like Virginia. I think we stopped off at West Virginia or something.
That's cool.
Yeah. Really beautiful countryside.
I'm so happy that you guys moved to Florida. This is such a treat. It's been such a pleasure to have you guys come in and practice. And I remember you took Tamara's class first and she's like, oh my gosh, I met these really cool people that were up in New York. They're living here in Florida and they practice with Dharma and they seem really sweet and super nice. And so I was like, I can't wait to meet them. And I think you guys came a couple times before I actually got a chance to meet you, like maybe a couple months or a month or two went by before it actually coordinated. And so I'm really excited to have this chance to get to know both you guys. And for those of you listening, you're hearing half of the married couple. The next half will be Pam's husband, Andrew. So with that being said, I'm really thankful for you to come in today and to get a chance to converse like this and for me to be able to hear your story and share it. Is there anything else that you feel like, if you have, okay, maybe what if today was your last day on planet Earth? Well, at least for this time around, and you have to leave a message. Uh-oh, is that too heavy?
That's such a beautiful question, Todd. You made me cry.
Is that too big? Should I prep you with this question before you showed up so you knew what to say?
I love that question.
What would you say to the world? What would you say to the world? You're leaving us behind. You're not leaving us behind right now. We got many, many, many good years to go. I've never had anybody ask me this question. I don't know.
What are you trying to
I don't know. No, my psychic skills are not fully developed yet. I don't know what is happening.
So
however,
many messages.
Yeah.
Look after each other.
Nice.
Look after each other. Be kind to one another. Keep practicing. Keep practicing.
Yeah.
Because even if we don't reach the goal, whatever the goal is, self-realization, enlightenment, you just pick up where you left off in the next life. So it's not the end. Just to be kind and compassionate to each other.
Nice.
Yeah. Nothing too deep.
Just be nice, you guys.
Just be nice. Be kind,
yeah.
Be kind to everybody, look after one another. Remember, we're all on this journey together.
Yeah.
And then, sometimes it's very easy to be like, you know, oh, so critical of yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not, I should be yogi, I should have been doing this. Or even critical of others. That person, she's not good, or she said this. No, if this was your last day, then you'd probably be nicer to everybody else. Yeah. Even more nicer.
I think so.
Than you are. Yeah.
Amazing, Pam. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd. Thanks for having me. It's such an honor and pleasure.
Thank you. Native Yoga Toddcast is produced by myself. The theme music is dreamed up by Bryce Allen. If you like this show, let me know. If there's room for improvement, I want to hear that too. We are curious to know what you think and what you want more of, what I can improve. And if you have ideas for future guests or topics, please send us your thoughts to info@nativeyogacenter. You can find us at nativeyogacenter.com. And hey, if you did like this episode, share it with your friends, rate it and review, and join us next time.